ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot.
Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, a deep dive crime podcast which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. Let's talk about today's case. Let's go back to the evening of the 22nd of March 2022. Now, this essentially is where it all starts to play out. It's when Amy Pugh calls emergency services, and it's a panicked call, although is it an authentic call is the question, because she claims that she's found her husband, Kyle, and she's found him in a state that no one wants to find anyone. He's taken his own life. She's pleading urgently for help. Paramedics rush to the scene, but despite their best efforts, 29-year-old Kyle Pugh was sadly pronounced dead the following day. At first, it did appear to seem like a tragic case of suicide, but as we know, first appearances are often incorrect, and it seems that inconsistencies in this story start to tell a very troubling narrative. Let's talk about Amy Louise Pugh. So she was born on the 10th of September 1990 in Wolverhampton. She grew up on Stafford Road in Wolverhampton. She later on moved to a home in Aston Drive in Newport, Shropshire. And that was actually a home that she shared with her then husband, Kyle Pugh. So Kyle, the victim in this case, he was born in the early 1990s. He grew up in Hollingswood. That's actually a suburb in Telford in Shropshire. He was regarded by people who knew and loved him as quite well known. He was seen as quite a well-known Hollingswood lad. Kyle's family and friends actually called him by the nickname Fringe. And he was known as an MC. So he was kind of a minor celebrity, I guess you'd say, in Telford. He was also somebody who owned a small design business called Design Dudes UK. Family of him said that he was somebody who was really visionary. He had a great spirit for design, and he was the CEO and founder of Design Dudes UK. But they also said he was one of those all-rounders. He could just turn his hand to anything. He was basically a man of many talents. Now, he and Pugh got married. They settled in Newport, and they go on to have three children together. Now, according to people who knew the victim, they say he was absolutely devoted to those kids. They were the centre of his life. And even after he and Pugh separated, he genuinely was invested in the children's lives. He visited as regularly as he could. And people who knew him said he genuinely was a truly loving father. But his life wasn't perfect. He had some struggles. He actually had issues with his mental health. He got prior experiences of self-harm, and also he suffered with suicidal ideation. He'd had prior suicide attempts. But friends and family said that despite this, he still had a really optimistic outlook for the future. And in the words of his own father, Keith Pugh, he said he wasn't an angel, no one is, but he had a great heart. And that's so true. Absolutely none of us is perfect. Most of us have a few skeletons in our closet, including myself. Most of us have things that we would not want other people to know about our lives, to be laid bare in public, for example. But at the end of the day, he was a good guy on the whole. Now, from all accounts, there were issues in Amy and Kyle Pugh's relationship. It was considered quite a deeply troubled relationship. It was described as volatile, turbulent. It was also described as abusive. And let's be clear, violence and abuse in relationships can never be tolerated. It is inexcusable, it is reprehensible, it is toxic. And it is a scenario in particular where women who are involved often are seen as the victims and the male is described as a perpetrator. And I would argue, don't get me wrong, that because men often have the upper hand physically, that a man should never strike a woman. And I mean that even when a woman strikes a man. I don't excuse the behaviour of the female. I'm just saying that when a woman hits you, you're far less likely to get an injury in comparison to if a man hits you. That being said, it shouldn't occur at all. And I do also understand that women are physically violent in relationships and sometimes they do receive violence back because of that. But on both sides, it's completely inexcusable. So I'm not going to be on the side of Kyle in this situation if he's retaliating in violence towards his partner, nor am I coming down on her side if she is being violent towards him. It's inexcusable. We also understand that certain relationships are more toxic than others and give a license and amplification to these kind of horrendous behaviours. And the reality is when there are children involved as well, as is witnessing this violence and seeing that their parents are doing this to each other, that has such an impact and ramification for those children as well. So they are victims as well. So by the late 2010s, the relationship was considered toxic by people who knew them, neighbours, relatives, heard frequent arguments. They actually witnessed physical altercations between the two of them. And it's worth noting that this was often fueled and exacerbated by drugs, which again is really bad, particularly when you have children around. And on at least two occasions, Kyle seriously assaulted Pew. So I said, I am not going to be on his side whatsoever when it comes down to the violence that was exhibited by him and obviously towards Pew. But at the same time, we are going to be aware that Pew is not innocent in this circumstance either. Now, in one instance, he actually punched her with such force that he broke her jaw, which is horrific. Now, on another occasion, at a barbecue with friends, Kyle actually dragged Pew by her hair. And one of the sad things is that Pew did not report these assaults to the police. Now, it seems that initially Pew never responded with violence towards Kyle, but in the end, she starts to. So she didn't stay what I suppose we could suggest was a passive victim. So eventually she starts to fight back. And then in the end, she's even initiating violence herself. The ideal would have been that she would have removed herself from the relationship, walked away from the relationship. She didn't. She kind of decided that she was going to go down the same route herself. So on the 15th of October 2021, we know that Pew set fire to Kyle's work.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Shop in the garage. Bear in mind, he used that area to actually create music as an MC and for his design business. So that is going to really impact his business. And also it's going to make him really rageful. And while the workshop burnt down, she even sent Kyle videos and she was singing Ring of Fire. So that's a way to really escalate and amplify issues within this relationship. In November 2024, she was actually found guilty of arson. She was given a 19-month sentence that was actually suspended for 2 years. To be fair, she got off quite lightly. Arson sentences can be incredibly long in the UK. But like I said, you're just seeing this toxicity come into physical form at the highest level. Now, by early 2022, Pew and Kyle were formally separated. They were living apart, and that is the right thing to do because clearly they were horrific together. Pew was 31 at the time, so she's living in the Newport house. Kyle's moved out. He'd actually began a new relationship with another woman. Now, at this point, Pew starts to get jealous. She's upset that Kyle is moving on, and we see this a lot in relationships that have become this toxic. They're horrific apart, but they're also devastated when they're not together. In this case, however, because Kyle has met somebody else, his energy and his focus will have shifted from Pew on to this new partner. For Pew, however, who's still alone, this is very upsetting because she's probably broken up with him, got back together, broken up with him, got back together many times. When they're high together, it's great. When they're low together, it's dreadful. But all of a sudden, the reality of their future that she may have just taken as going to happen, no matter how awful their situations were, they're always going to reconnect, has been really challenged because now she's looking at him in a different life with a different person, and that makes her feel a sense of abandonment. It makes her feel a sense of being anchorless, and we know that even though she's had a horrendous time with him, that relationship has used violence, control and power to some degree as a level of intimacy. So it's a dealing with these kind of intense feelings that are really toxic and negative, and believing that that's actually a part of the passion within the relationship. It's fundamentally flawed, but you can see how people buy into that belief system, and one no doubt that she's bought into. Now we get to the 22nd of March 2022. At this point, Kyle actually comes to Newport at the house to visit the kids. And they call this the family home, as you would. It's where the children reside, and he's lived there as well. Pew lets him in. Apparently for a while, things were calm. But we know that she obviously has some resentment building, and we know that she probably wants him back, even though that would be a dreadful decision to make. Apparently, they're in the kitchen, they're listening to music together, they're having some drinks together. She probably has an idea that something positive is going to play out that evening, maybe even some intimacy with him to prove to herself that she's still worthy and that she's better than this new partner that he's met, even potentially to suggest a reconciliation. We get to 9:04 p.m. and then suddenly, Pew is dialing 999. Now, when she gets through to the West Midlands Ambulance Service, she sounds frantic on one level, but there is just something about her voice that is not compelling me to find this authentic. She said that she just found a husband hanging in their home. She says, "Can I have an ambulance, please? My husband's killed himself." Now, immediately this causes questions. This is his ex's home where his children live. If you have mental health issues, the chances that you're going to go to your ex-partner's home where your children are present and take your own life is very, very minimal. There are lots of places that you can do that. Why would you insert yourself at a place that you've exited, particularly when you're in a relationship with a new person? But like I said, let's just give her the benefit of the doubt at this moment in time. So at this point, she tells them he's used a belt to hang himself from the back door of the house. And she's actually heard on the call saying, "Kyle, wake up. Why have you done this?
Emergency word service.
Hello, can I have the ambulance, please? My husband's holding himself."
"Ambulance, thank you."
"Yes, please. Can I get an ambulance? F***ing.
Currently receiving a high volume.
Hello, can I have the ambulance, please? My husband's holding himself."
"Okay.
And my husband's dead, like, on a level of..."
Okay, my darling. I'm going to get some help arranged, okay?
"Just give me gas compressors, it's purple."
Okay. Absolutely brilliant. Push. Come on, my darling, you've got this.
Come on, my darling.
Now, the 999 operator is most invested at this point in making sure that Pew carries out CPR, and she does seem to follow those instructions. Pew then explains that she cut Kyle down from the belt, she dragged him into the house from the back doorway, and that while she was trying to revive him, she slapped him in the face to wake him up. Now, I'm sure that a lot of you know my story. Guys, I found my father hanging in our family garage. I arrived just after he'd taken his own life. I was actually there when he was doing it. I just didn't know he was doing it. And I went into the garage and I physically cut him down. And let me tell you, I caused myself an injury, and it was not a pretty experience. The idea of me dragging him, that dead weight, and being in a situation physically strong enough to do that, it was not going to happen, particularly when I was enduring the trauma that I was going through. So I've lived this. So again, automatically, I don't understand why she would have cut him down from the belt and dragged him into the house from the back doorway. You deal with the situation as it arises in situ. You're not moving.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino. It's a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Somebody's body anywhere, but this is the story she's telling. Now at 9:15 p.m. an ambulance and police units arrive at the home, so they dispatch obviously paramedics and then further paramedics, etc., and also the CID will come because the police unit want to make sure that this is a death that somebody has caused on themselves, or to note if anything untoward has happened at the hands of another human being. I've been through this myself. I was the person on the scene, therefore I was the one who had to be interviewed. And don't get me wrong, CID are incredibly gentle and incredibly respectful when you are dealing with the worst moment in your life, but they need to get that information ASAP and they need to check out that you're not involved in the death of that person. Now, when they arrive, they find Kyle lying on the floor unresponsive. Pewee is performing CPR on him and she appeared to some degree distraught. She's crying. Paramedics then take over the resuscitation efforts. Now, as paramedics do the CPR, Pewee is basically interacting and interjecting with comments, and she's telling them immediately that Kyle's attempted suicide before and she saved his life in the past during such attempts. And she's trying to kind of convey this idea that she's this loving partner who's been there for him during his mental health episodes and has tried to save him on numerous occasions. This is unusual because really the only thing you're going to be concerned about in that moment is he okay? You're not really going to be thinking about saying what a great person you've been in the past and what you've been through. You're going to be concerned about him being okay and surviving this attempt. Now, she does ask the paramedics, has he got a pulse or what? Because there's a chance that he will survive this stupidity. And again, just wanting to know, has he got a pulse? Is he going to be okay? Now, on one level, you'd say, well, of course she's going to want to know that. But on another, you can be suspicious and think, does she want to know that because she's hoping to God he isn't going to survive because potentially he has information that could be used against her? And like I said, she's saying, I've saved him so many times. Now, the paramedics do what they do best. They work really hard on Kyle at the scene and they do manage to return a pulse. So at this point, there is hope. He's rushed to Princess Royal Hospital in Telford. And at that point, with respect, the paramedics are thinking to themselves, you know, this seems consistent with a hanging. It's a guy with neck injuries. His wife's distraught. She's been administering CPR. He's got this history of suicidal ideation and attempts. So this makes sense. Now, on the 23rd of March 2022, really sadly, Kyle dies at the hospital. He never regained consciousness. Fortunately, at least his family got to say goodbye to him. He passed away literally surrounded by love. Now, when it came down to the investigation, there was a lot of suspicion from the get-go. So the family of Kyle was immediately suspicious. So the investigation by West Mercia Police, well, just like the family have suspicions, they start to have suspicions. There are inconsistencies in Pew's account. So that's going to put her in the line of fire without a shadow of a doubt. Then after that, she's the last person with the individual who's died. That's another reason why she'll be a suspect at that point. They have to discount her, don't they? Now, Kyle's family immediately are sceptical of the scenario that she's described. They just don't get it. They don't buy it. They're thinking to themselves, why would he have hanged himself at that address in that situation with her? And bear in mind, they said his life changes have been really positive. He was in remarkably good spirits that particular day. Now, don't get me wrong, people who take their own lives often will have a period just before doing that of being quite worried. They've made a decision. It gives them a sense of calm. They feel that they've settled on something that they are absolutely going to go through, and it relieves the anxiety they've been carrying. That can happen. So when people are surprised that they were in a good mood and then went home and did something awful to themselves, it's really hard to compute. It does happen that way at times. So I'm not throwing that out as an explanation. But they said he was also busy making plans for the future. He wasn't fearful of the future. He wasn't anxious about it. He wasn't saying he was worried about it. Quite the contrary. And that seems odd. They were also really aware of just the turbulent, abusive environment relationship that these two had had. So this meant that they really felt that foul play could have happened in this situation. So it's those concerns that they kind of explained to the police that made the police launch a murder investigation. Now, of course, the critical step is always going to be the post-mortem on Kyle's body. And at this point, a new story is told. So during that autopsy, they discover that Kyle actually suffered fatal neck compression injuries, which was consistent with strangulation or chokehold rather than typical injuries from a drop hanging. So first of all, no distinct ligature mark on his neck. They also, though, noted facial trauma. So he had a fractured eye socket and a broken nose. Now, come on, a fractured eye socket. That's a really serious injury. That takes some kind of impact. And also a broken nose. Again, that takes heavy impact. Now, come on, that doesn't suggest some kind of suicide attempt. That absolutely points to a really serious altercation. So it's this scientific evidence that basically sets the groundwork for treating the case as a homicide. So the police then start to collect data from Kyle's phone, and they actually discovered he'd been actively communicating with friends and family on the 22nd of March. He was making plans for later that night. Again, that means that it's surprising that he would have chosen to end his life. He even sent a voice note to a friend about meeting up later that evening. He also messaged his father, Keith, and his new girlfriend to discuss future plans. This is not the behaviour of a man on the verge of dying by suicide. Now, again, there'll be people listening saying, well, I know somebody who had a psychotic break. They were here 1 minute, gone the next. I've met people whose family members did that. I get it. But he doesn't sound like he's going through any kind of psychotic break at this moment in time. And yes, they can be almost instantaneous. I have known of somebody who was perfectly well, had a break, threw themselves in front of a train. It happens. But for me, again, it provokes more suspicion about how his hand has arrived. Now, at 8:55 p.m., this is while the fight, the altercation must have been transpiring. Kyle's girlfriend calls Kyle's phone and Pew answers the call. And guess what she says? She says something along the line.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Signs of, he's my husband, he is never coming back. This is where he is staying. Now, that doesn't incriminate her. That could just be her in a jealous rage, having a few drinks, saying, I want him back. He's staying here with me. It doesn't mean I'm going to kill my husband. I'm going to prevent him coming back to you. But nonetheless, again, it gives us an insight into her mindset at this moment in time. She's jealous, she's angry, she's resentful. She's combative, she's competitive in that moment as well. So it also shows, of course, that Pew's conscious. She's also deliberate enough while the crime's taking place to actually answer a phone call and to declare that Kyle's never coming back. Not saying she killed him at this point. I'm saying that's how angry she was at this point. And that actually occurred before she called 999. So we could also argue potentially she has carried out the crime and she means he's never coming back. Now, as the police start to question Pew, this is in the days after Kyle's death, her story just ultimately starts to show very obvious cracks. Now, of course, she's going to stick to the core claim. She's going to say that she found Kyle hanging and she's going to say, I had nothing to do with any harm. I've done nothing to hurt him at all. I've never hurt him. He's the man I love. He's the father of my children. Under questioning, however, she gives explanations that just don't make sense. They ring false, essentially. So when she's confronted with Kyle's facial injuries, she claims that those happened when she slapped him to try and help him get revived, to wake him up. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm thinking if you're in a situation where your partner has just tried to kill themselves or successfully killed themselves, when you're trying to wake them up, the aim would be to help them, not to fundamentally injure them terribly. I mean, you're talking serious grievous bodily harm when you fracture somebody's eye socket and you break the nose. Could you imagine if you were in a scenario with paramedics? I'm just going to let the paramedics sing, come in, come in. Oh, thank you, thank you. This is my partner. They're obviously in a terrible state. Can you help them? We can actually. I've not been able to wake them up. Don't worry about it. We've got something for that. Oh, good, because I was hoping you'd have the defibrillator. We don't need the defibrillator. Oh, no, no. What do you do? We just punch them in the face. Sometimes we use objects to cause blunt force trauma. We find it's very helpful for reviving them. Could you imagine? But that, again, adds no credibility to her story. The idea that his nose and eye socket are fractured just shows that high-level violence has taken place. Also, another thing that she said she didn't do that is obviously going to be proven completely incorrect is she denied answering the phone call from Kyle's girlfriend, even though Kyle's girlfriend will have it registered and logged on her phone. So she tells the police their conversation never happened. I always think to myself, why do people believe they're going to get away with it? You know, you're getting asked. So did you answer a phone call from Kyle's girlfriend? No, no, no. Are you sure? Yeah, I didn't. I absolutely didn't. I know. I would absolutely remember if I'd answered a call to Kyle's girlfriend and suggested he was never coming home. Sorry, we didn't say that. What? We didn't tell you that that was the case. No, I'm just saying that I never answered a call where I suggested that he was never coming home. He was mine and he was staying. I'm just saying that never happened. We never said that happened. No, and I'm saying it never happened. It never happened. Why is it logged on her phone? I don't know. It never happened. Honestly. But she's going to go down this line. Bear in mind, as I've said, Kyle's girlfriend's got the phone records. That's going to show the call time and the duration. So it's clear that she answered the phone. But she's going to go down the line of, well, how do you know it was me? Of course she is. Now, within days, West Mercy police feel that they have all the evidence they need. So they officially upgrade the case from an unexplained sudden death to homicide investigation. And Detective Inspector Joe Delahaye and her actual team, they gather forensics, phone records, and they also get witness statements. D.I. Delahaye later summarised their findings saying, our investigation shows that following an argument which turned physical, Amy got Kyle into some form of headlock or compression to the neck that caused him to fall unconscious. Realising Kyle was unresponsive, Amy made the decision to not call for help immediately and delayed calling emergency services. During that time, she made several phone calls to her father, including a 6-minute video call. I kid you not. She video called her father for 6 minutes. And I guess that some people will think to themselves, wait a minute, how is this woman? She's not a big woman. She's not a strong looking woman. And size matters where physical strength is concerned very often. There's going to be some size 6 kickboxing, mean ass female warrior watching this saying, you think, Emma? I get it. Some of you are incredibly strong, who are deeply petite, but often size brings strength. And she isn't someone of size. So it's easy to think, well, how on earth could she possibly have overpowered this man and choked him? Well, if you've been drinking and you're not necessarily in charge of your faculties, and as a man, you have reduced capacity because of that, you could well be overpowered. Also, if somebody gets you in a chokehold with their arms or even their legs, women have incredibly strong thighs, this could absolutely cause your demise. The idea, though, that she has after this situation, called her father, and by now, bear in mind, he's got a broken nose and a fractured eye socket. So he'd been gravely injured by her before the actual killing. And she's gone through all of this and then called her dad. Why? Obviously to try to think of some kind of way of getting a story straight. Now, bear it in mind, Amy was very much aware, according to the police, of Kyle's vulnerabilities. She knew about his mental health struggles. And they said, I believe she callously used this as part of her lies to protect herself by claiming he had taken his own life. Highly manipulative, literally trying to get away with murder. In cases like this, we're always aware that, of course, Pew has been a victim, without a doubt. She's been violently assaulted by Kyle on many occasions, it seems. That's reprehensible. And I think this narrative in particular is what really stands out here, because what the police are saying is she's crafted this story to literally try to get away with murder. If she'd actually called the police and said, this horrible altercation has taken place, it's got violent between the two of us, we have a history of this toxicity, I was protecting myself, I put him in a chokehold. I'm not saying that would have been the actual truth, I'm just saying if she'd done that, there would have been far more understanding of how this situation arrived than literally killing.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Casino, America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
This guy, after brutalizing him and then using his mental health struggle to try to get away with murder, deeply, deeply incriminating. It means that you thought it out, you figured a way forward, you're using his vulnerabilities against him, and that looks terrible for you. It means you're taking no responsibility, no accountability, and that means that you don't have remorse. Now, we get to her arrest on the 1st of April 2022, and at this point, they do arrest her on suspicion of murder. She's then interrogated. She's just maintaining her innocence throughout this. She just sticks to that story. Kyle killed himself. She had no hand in it whatsoever. Now, they do release her on police bail while the investigation continues. So they obviously don't believe that she's a risk to other people. And she's actually free then for over 2 years because they take a long time building this case. And that must be absolutely devastating. So for the wider family of Kyle, the fact is she is a free woman. And you're always worried in these circumstances that somehow that person is not going to end up before the court. So they're living in a state of distress and trauma every single day that she is free. Then we get to the 22nd of November 2024. At this point, she is formally charged with the murder of Kyle Pugh, and then she's rearrested. Now, initially, she appears in court via video link. That was on the 22nd of November. This is where she faces the charges at Birmingham Crown Court. She's 34 years of age at this point, and she entered a plea of not guilty. Now, the judge at this point says, listen, you're going to remain in custody until the trial, but it feels like she was just a little bit disconnected. She just said, can I go now? So at this point, she is held on remand in prison at HMP Eastwood Park. We get to the trial that took place in spring 2025 at Stafford Crown Court. It lasted 6 weeks, so it was a big old trial. Now, Judge Christina Montgomery, that was a judge presiding over the case, and the prosecution was run by Julian Evans. The defence was run by Sam Robinson. The jury was made up of 7 men and 5 women. Now, when it came down to the opening statements, the prosecution opened with immediately casting doubt on Pew's version of events, said on the 22nd of March, Pew played the part of a concerned wife making a desperate 999 call, claiming to find that Kyle had hung himself, but she had actually inflicted the wounds on him herself. So goes in with that strong, this is what happened. And that's really powerful psychologically for the jury to hear. Basically, the prosecution are saying, we know this. They also, though, acknowledged the toxic nature of their relationship, noted that the relationship did involve physical violence to each other and was often fueled by drink or drugs. They gave the jury context that it wasn't this one-sided story of an innocent victim, but this mutually abusive relationship that escalated to lethality. They recounted the events of the 22nd of March in detail, explained that Kyle was in a new relationship, so just showing the jury what the motivation was, and noted that he'd gone to the Newport house to visit his kids. They told the jury that Amy struck Kyle first. They also said that at this point, Kyle will have struck her back, but crucially, they say it didn't stop there. It involved Amy overpowering Kyle. They said she gained the upper hand over him. She was able to subdue him and deliberately compressed his neck by some means, whether that be a chokehold, strangulation, or a ligature. It was violence directed at the neck and violence that was unlawful. The prosecution then walked the jury through Amy's actions after the horrific violence. So they highlighted that 20-minute delay before calling 999. They said Pew called her father before eventually calling emergency services at 9:04 p.m., 20 minutes after the attack. Now, this is central to the prosecution's case and their story and narrative, because what they want to show is that she had an absolute intent to cover up the killing of Kyle, because her first instinct wasn't to call emergency responders. It wasn't to save the man. It was to save her own skin. Her first instinct was to call a father, formulate a story, and not actually help him at all. And within that 20 minutes, it caused devastation for his brain, for his body, and it meant that there was no likelihood he could be saved. So she absolutely put herself before him. Now, the prosecution, they actually went ahead and played the recording of the 999 call for the jury. The operator ran Pew through the instructions for CPR. And bear in mind, at this point, she's literally pretending to address her dying husband, who we know had had a 20-minute gap, so he was likely absolutely dead at this point. And yet she's screaming, you fucking idiot, why did you do this? So really play acting in this moment, which again is really sinister when you consider what's played out. Then you've got that body cam footage worn by the police who arrive at the scene, and she's sobbing and she's telling paramedics, just wake him up, please. Is there a chance he'll survive? And they are so sinister, those actions under this new lens, because she's trying at least to put on this convincing show to deceive police at her own crime scene. Imagine psychologically being able to disconnect from the reality of your actions to put on a show. To know that you've just killed somebody, but to be able to stand there and try to seem like a victim so people show you sympathy, empathy, and of course, most importantly, freedom, because you don't want to go to prison for it. Now, when it came down to her digital footprint, the phone records basically show calls from Pew's phone to her father between 8:45 and 9:04 p.m. Bear in mind, they also show a lack of any 999 calls until 9:04 p.m. So then they also have that incoming call from Kyle's girlfriend at 8:55 on his phone. Now, Kyle's phone was never found. This is despite searches. So that suggests that somebody intentionally disposed of it, doesn't it? And I think we all know who likely disposed of it or who had someone dispose of it for them. But this reinforces that Pew absolutely had a plan to eliminate evidence. And she prioritised calling her father that 20 minutes where he was given no help, which was critical. Think about it. No innocent person faced with a person that they care for, allegedly care for, who's tried to kill themselves or indeed successfully killed themselves at their address, would call a friend or a parent before calling emergency services. Even if you did, as a knee-jerk reaction, immediately call a parent, they'd call 999 for you. That wouldn't be incriminating. It would just be a choice of running to the person that's going to make you feel safe in that moment and know what to do, as opposed to trying to cover up the crime, which is clear in this case. Now, of course, the defence have to paint a picture as to why these things may have played out, and that's what Sam Robinson does. They don't try to claim she's innocent of any wrongdoing. They basically say, listen, this is a toxic relationship. What we are saying is there was no premeditation to actually kill him, because of course that's the bar for murder, and they're trying to prove this is not murder, it was not premeditated, it's one of those spur of the moment horrific incidents that should never have happened but did. So Robinson said, this is a case of impaired judgment and a lack of self-control, but not one of malice. I'm going to be real here, Sam, just going to throw it out there. I would find it pretty malicious if someone ligatured or strangled me to death. Genuinely, I would feel that they had malice within them. And yeah, a lack of self-control, believe me, I've often, at times, drank more than one bottle of wine. Only one bottle in a glass, maybe. But for me, that would be a lack of self-control. It's not killing someone. That's not a lack of self-control. And yes, impaired judgment, we've all had that. But at the end of the day, I don't think that, again, meets the bar when it comes down to discussing a murder. It's not just impaired judgment. It's not just a lack of self-control. It is absolutely one of malice, but it's also one of cover-up. And that shows an intent to try to get away with something reprehensible that you've done. Like I said, if I was talking about this case and we were saying that she got on the phone, admitted what she'd done, I wouldn't have a empathy and sympathy with her actions. I'd have an understanding of how it arrived at that point. But because she tries to cover it up, she wants to save herself, that puts her in a very malevolent place. Now, the defense emphasized she didn't plan to kill Kyle, although she did make that call saying that he was never coming home, so who knows? And they actually said this, during the course of a fast-moving confrontation, again, just going to throw it out there, what one where he had his nose broken and his eye socket fractured? I mean, she didn't have injuries like that, did she? But again, this is what he's going to say. He said, this isn't a case of pre-arming. It isn't a case of pre-planning. This was an eruption of violence. There was an intent to cause serious harm, not kill. Now, to be fair, how do you know what level of violence will kill someone? Unless you've done it many times before, you ain't gonna have some kind of bar. But you know what there is a bar for? Not actually being violent. You're not gonna do any harm when your bar is don't be violent. The minute you start using objects to hit someone, whether it's your hands and fists or whether it's objects around you, you can cause not just serious harm, but death. That to me shows a level of premeditation anyway, because we all know where these things can end and you choose to engage in those behaviours and end they will. In this case, fatally. So the defence are basically urging the jury to just see this crime in that kind of heat of the moment manslaughter scenario, not intentional murder. And unfortunately, to some degree, for the jury listening, they will be listening to how at odds that is with Pugh's own plea of total innocence. So even her defence isn't defending what played out. They're saying, listen, we know he died. We know that she has been involved in his killing as far as they're saying. But she has said, I'm totally innocent. I've done nothing wrong. And that lack of alignment to some degree is problematic for Pugh. Now, of course, they're going to highlight the history of domestic abuse, and rightly so. Pugh did suffer at Kyle's hands. They detailed various incidents of violence that had been committed by Kyle. So bear in mind, she had a broken jaw. That is horrific. A broken jaw is something that will occur if you're slammed against something or if somebody punches you. And we're talking about quite a small woman. So it's offensive that ever happened to her. Also, of course, those recounts of her being dragged by her hair in front of others. And they want to give that jury a full picture of the nature of the relationship, and rightly so. They talked about the fact that Pugh's actions were as a result of years of abuse. I would suggest at this point they're looking at the battered woman's trauma response, where women who were in very violent, domestically abusive relationships, the argument is that at times they genuinely believe that even if they leave their partner, they will never let them go and that partner will come for them. So I guess what they're trying to get across there is this idea that, you know, if you are in a situation where you feel ultimately cornered and you genuinely feel like your life will be controlled by this individual and the only way you're ever going to be free is to kill them because they're coming for you, whatever, then that at times can be an effective defense. However, he left. He was with somebody else. So that's not going to stand. So you can't really argue that particular context psychologically that she was suffering from battered woman syndrome, he'd left. But they are obviously trying to minimise her actions and maximise her victim status. And like I said, we are not denying she was a victim. She absolutely was. Now, she was actually seen crying in the dock as those past incidents were recounted. And a court officer did actually have to hand her a tissue. And I get it, because she's going to be re-traumatised hearing that. Like I said, she can be both a victim and a perpetrator in exactly the same moment. Now, when it came down to the verdict, it took the jury 11 hours. So there was probably somebody there who was struggling with the verdict they were going to come out with. And it certainly wasn't an immediate decision. You know, we've seen juries deliberate for days at times and it's a struggle. We've seen juries deliberate for 45 minutes. So this is certainly one that provoked some discussion. But on the 12th of June 2025, the jury did return a guilty verdict. So then we moved to the sentencing phase and she returned to Stafford Crown Court on the 5th of September 2025. That was for her sentencing hearing. At this point, of course, the victims get to put across the impact of the loss that's occurred in their lives. Keith Pugh said his son had a great heart, one that no longer beats and hasn't for over 3 years. He said the grief is the worst pain any parent can feel. He said that Pugh had gone with the family to arrange the funeral and actually visited their family home. So she accompanied them. And that makes me feel like there is just a sinister side of her. I get that she was trying to make sure that she was maintaining this side of being the victim in this circumstance, losing somebody that she loved. And obviously there'll be a relative closeness to his family because she's been in their lives for a long time. But it's just the idea that she actually went and helped to arrange the funeral when she'd literally taken his life. And they also said that this elongated the investigation and it just placed the family under an unimaginable toll. And I get that completely. Kyle's sister, Victoria Edmonds, said, "Kyle's death has been a nightmare I've not woken up from." She described saying goodbye to her brother in hospital and then having to move out of the way as he died so that Amy Pugh could be with him. So literally, Amy Pugh played the acting to the point where she was physically with him, the man that she killed in the moments when he was dying, as in at least dying in hospital. I appreciate he was no longer present, but certainly that's stealing something so precious from the family. And it's replacing psychologically for the family a picture of the predator being present with the prey when in those final moments. And that absolutely distorts that experience for them fully. It's devastating. It's diabolical. And like I said, she's the reason we've lost him forever. Then another sister, Kaylee Pugh, said that she was going to remember her brother for the positive things. He's a kind, funny man who loved his children immensely. She did say that there was a toxic culture between Kyle and his wife. She said that the arguments were becoming physical. She said that their marriage was really violent and that each of them contributed to the violence. And she said that she wanted people to remember that men can also be victims of domestic violence. She said, as a culture, we are hardwired to believe domestic violence towards a man is impossible. They also spoke about the fact that they had to wait to hold the funeral because of the prolonged examination of his body. And she said, the last 3.5 years have been an absolute hell. As a family, we did welcome Amy with open arms. And up until the inconsistencies around Kyle's death became apparent, we still did. When it came down to the verdict, Judge Christina Montgomery sentenced Pugh to life imprisonment, but she was given a minimum term of 13 years and 77 days. So Pugh is currently aged 34. Those 77 days actually were given specifically to account for time that Pugh had already spent in custody since November 2024. When it came down to the sentencing, Judge Christina Montgomery sentenced Pugh to life imprisonment, but the minimum term was going to be 13 years and 77 days. Now she's 34, so obviously if she's let out at that minimum term, and there's a strong possibility she will be, because the argument will be she probably doesn't pose a risk to anybody else. I would imagine that would be the mindset that the parole board have, that she's not being violent elsewhere in her life to all intents and purposes. And I guess with the right kind of help and support, she's less likely to reoffend. So there's a strong possibility she will get out. So she will relatively be young still. and obviously still be able to be involved with her family and walk through the rest of her life, hopefully peacefully without committing any crime. And certainly that's something that Kyle will not be able to do because of her crime. Now, bear in mind, she'd already been in custody since November 2024 when this sentence was passed. That will also be taken into consideration and knocked off the outcome when it comes down to those years that she's minimum expected to be inside. Now, the judge said this: Kyle Pugh was a cherished son and brother and a conscientious father. He is mourned by his family who have to try and come.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot.
Moto's free to play, like food stamps, in line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
To terms with his death, in the context of your callous deception of how it happened, she said there'd been a volatile dynamic between the couple and the conflict had been fueled by alcohol and substance abuse. She said, as your relationship deteriorated, the boundaries between victim and aggressor blurred. I accept that violence was introduced into your relationship by Kyle Pugh, but there came a point where you began to employ verbal and physical retaliation. She said that Pugh had been composed enough after inflicting injuries on her husband to tell persuasive and cohesive lies to the police about what happened. And indeed, like I said, that's highly incriminating. They went on to say, you had struck Kyle Pugh with such force that his nose and eye socket had been broken. And then you compressed his neck by using either a chokehold or a forearm against his windpipe. Such force was deployed that when you restricted the blood flow to his brain and he slipped into unconsciousness, your reaction was to call your father. You spoke to him before dialing 999. It was in the course of these calls that you must have decided to concoct a lie and stage a scene that blamed Kyle Pugh for his own injuries. I'm sure that reaction was one of panic, that you were taken aback by the immediacy and efficiency that you rendered him unconscious. She also said that the lies told by Pugh about Kyle's supposed suicide were cynical and cruel. She said those lies played on Kyle Pugh's vulnerability and cast him as the selfish and thoughtless attention seeker. I'm going to throw it out there. That's really harsh of the judge to say. The idea that somebody is selfish and thoughtless because they take their own life or attempt to take their own life, it blindsided me a bit with the judge's statement. But nonetheless, I just want to say here that anybody who's tried to take their own life or anybody who's thought of taking their own life, you're not an attention seeker, you're not thoughtless. And certainly to those of us who have lost our loved ones, they were not thoughtless attention seekers either. Sorry, just when I hear statements like that, I think it's grossly misunderstanding the reality of suicidal ideation and people who are successful in suicide attempts. Sorry, I digress, but I just feel I need to. She went on to say, your deception has caused Kyle Pugh's family significant additional suffering. To suggest he took his own life has been an unbearable postscript to his life. Now, following the actual sentencing, D.I. Delahaye said it was a long, complex investigation. She went on to say, we knew the pair had a volatile relationship. However, Kyle should not have died at the hands of the woman he once loved. Pugh callously used her knowledge of her ex-partner's mental health to protect herself, and added that while it was unusual for a woman to murder a man, the West Mercia Force would take all reports of domestic abuse seriously, and rightly so. Like I say, we absolutely can see Pugh as a victim. At times we can see Kyle as a perpetrator of domestic abuse. But nonetheless, she can also be a perpetrator of domestic abuse herself, a perpetrator of domestic violence, and certainly a perpetrator in this case of killing. I do feel that some people will be on the fence and maybe believe that she should have been found guilty of manslaughter. And I genuinely think that would have been the case had it not been for her trying to cover up this case. That means that she showed a lack of remorse, and that never goes down well with juries. Let me know your thoughts as ever. And like I said, I know that some guy will be watching this right now, some guy who's been beaten up by his partner. You need to report it. You are not being emasculated by this woman. It's not a sign that you're weak. It is a sign that you are trying your best to cope in a situation you should never have to cope with. Get out. Just like I would say it to a female, get out. You do not deserve this. This is not your fault. You do not need to put up with it. And on top of this, just to make it clear, if you are in a situation where your relationship is escalating to violence on both sides, it is because you are toxic. You need to remove yourself from these situations. Don't get to a point like Pew did where she starts to retaliate. Get your bags packed. Get yourself out of the door. Get yourself some support and move on to a better life. Because believe me, there is a better life out there. One of the things that's clear in this case is the victims are the children. They had three kids together. Now those kids don't have a mum and dad available to them. And that is an ultimate crying shame on every single level. See you again next time, guys. Loads of love. And look after yourselves. Be safe. That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot.
Moto's free to play, like food stamps, in line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic.
Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly.
Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.